Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water. Just in case if stuff gets too fire, I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need a spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Bill Tobin making the update. Do you know what Bill Tobin, maybe somebody would correct me on this, but do you know what his, in my mind anyway, place in NFL draft history is?
Isn't he the guy yelling at Mel Kiper?
He is the guy yelling about Mel Kiper.
About Mel Kiper.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Kiper tore their draft up. I'm not sure they know how the draft works.
Right. They drafted Trey Alberts.
That's a name?
Sure. Maybe. Yeah.
Trev Alberts.
Trev Alberts. Maybe it was someone else. There was a moment, and Kiper's line was something like, once again, the Colts have proven that they have no idea what they're doing, or something like that.
How the draft works. They've shown they don't know how the draft works.
Absolutely brilliant rant. And then later, ESPN, I mean, this was back in the day when the draft was like Tuesday morning at 11, when, you know, we'd call in sick or pretend to be sick and stay home so we could watch it. And then they get the one-on-one with Bill Tobin and like, who is Mel Kiper? What does he know? And it was an absolutely momentous occurrence in all of this, in the history of the NFL.
And probably huge for Mel Kiper's career.
Couldn't have been any better for Mel Kiper, who is still, I'm told, is still out there mocking drafts.
Yeah.
Is he the preeminent name still, or is Trapasso above him? Like, what? Where isn't Mel Kiper? He's still in the game.
He's the senior. He's the OG.
He is the OG. He is to blame for all of this, or to credit for all of this. Like, he is the guy.
He's still going. I used to order his. He had it looked like a workbook that you would get in school, and you could order it. I don't remember it getting comped or anything because we'd be lucky enough to get him on the show like when back in the early days when I was on at night. We'd get him on once a year leading up to the draft, and I'd have his book, and Joel Buschbaum also put out a book with Pro Football Weekly. And I would get to talk to Joel once a year or so too. He was a little easier to get than Mel Kiper because he wasn't affiliated with ESPN. But he also was a little more abrasive. One time our phones weren't working, and I apologized when I got him. Like, we reconnected with him. Brad will tell you about this. Brad Ryder was my producer at the time, I think, or maybe it was Steve Cishon. Anyway, we lose the connection. We get him back, and I say, Joel, I'm really sorry about the mix-up. He says, I can't talk to a dial tone. I'm like, wow, this is going great.
How old was this guy? That seems pretty crusty.
He was crusty. I don't know how old he was at the time. I think he's passed away since then. It's a long time ago now. But, anyway. But Kuiper, like,
How old do you think Kuiper is?
75.
Less. Come on. Way less.
I'm sticking with 75.
63.
Damn it.
I just looked.
I just wanted him to be way older.
I would have guessed less than 75, but higher than 63. 63. So that's like he's 30 or something around that draft. Maybe younger.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Mel Kuiper?
Right.
So good. Oh, you know what? Wikipedia says he has been widely credited for establishing mock drafting and is regarded as one of the first draftniks alongside Joel Buschbaum, if that's how you say it.
I think that
and he has a page, and he has been dead for more than 20 years.
Okay. Ooh.
But he wasn't
much
younger or older than Kuiper, actually. Yeah. 2002.
I feel like, just barely any degrees of separation, that makes me a draft OG. I'm talking to Joel Buschbaum and Mel Kuiper every year when they first started out. I don't about that.
I know the name, but I never had a conversation with Joel
Buschbaum.
Buschbaum.
Yep.
I believe that it's real. I do remember the name.
Yeah. He had his book, like Mel's was the size of like a, you know, like a, I don't know what is that 8x10 whatever it was, you know, a standard size like a high school folder size. Buschbaum's book was smaller, thicker. Just you know, it was fun to have, you know, Our Lads at the time. They also I would get a catalog from them.
Our Lads though, did they have a guy?
They had a few guys, and I don't remember the name of like the guy. They didn't have like a Mel Kuiper. But there were various people who'd worked there, and then there was like one that sort of felt like he was the Aaron Schatz of Our Lads, I guess.
Not Hub.
No, not Hub.
He was never with them?
No. He's
Pro Football Weekly?
Pro Football Weekly, so Buschbaum, like, you know, worked under that umbrella.
Hub Arkush.
Yeah.
What about Balzer?
Balzer, I also knew from I think, weekly columns in Pro Football Weekly.
But maybe the draft or no?
Not so much the draft. I don't recall that being his corner of the football world.
McShay, who's on the Rushmore of the NFL draft behemoth?
If I could think of a name for me of the person I'm thinking of from Our Lads, I would say Kuiper, Buschbaum, whoever that dude is that I can't think of. It's tough to make the case that he belongs on Mount Rushmore. I can't even remember his name. And then I don't know who comes
Dr. Z.
That.
So Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, was on the ESPN panel. The number one draft in my memory is 1983. Not because I'm 11, remember everything about that broadcast from watching it. I think I remember going out to the end of the driveway to get the school bus, and maybe my mother coming outdoors to say the Bills had drafted Tony Hunter. I'm not sure that lines up. That's really early in the morning.
Right.
But so I might not be right about that. But so I don't remember like
maybe she told you that when you were coming in from the bus after school. Is that possible?
Maybe, but me, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But you know, I always want to be like, I'm not sure I remember this the way I want to say that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because your brain, you know, you get older and things move around. But the 30 for 30 on the 83 draft mm-hmm. is my, by far, favorite 30 for 30. It's the only one I ever think of watching back. I love that documentary. Tom Selleck is the narrator, Marvin Demoff is the agent. He's got it. It's kind of funny I mentioned this because, as I told you earlier, like an hour ago, I found an old notebook of mine picking up in my basement last night of the 04 season. That's where I got to this tweet, by the way, at Shope Talk. You can see what that is. I don't want to get into all that. But anyway, the 83 draft from the documentary is the one that's the clearest in my mind. And Zimmerman is on the – he's at the table with Berman – And
he's like the least presentable TV person I've ever seen.
Right.
And I don't say that to make fun of the guy. He is just not like, all right, you want me to be here? All right. You might as well have a cigar in his mouth. He's just like,
I just rewatched that 30
was you.
For 30.
I was thinking as Mike brought it up, I'm like, who was tweeting about this? And it's you.
Just watched it. Every time he goes on to like talk, he's kind of like staring down at the desk. Like he doesn't really want to be on TV. You can tell this is new to him.
Yeah.
And he also was like upset the entire time. I mean, he was entertaining though for that reason.
In a world where literally everyone has a camera set up at home and the same background, every person looks the same. Everybody's on TV now. Wouldn't you kill for like a Paul Zimmerman to not even have any clue?
Right.
Somebody just like, I do not care about any of this.
That's why I said that he maybe is one of the least presentable people I've ever seen on TV.
Bring him back.
And I mean it as a, like, I'm glad for him. I'm glad to have the memory because now everything, you don't get that gig unless you're super polished and smooth. And like, he just was nuts and bolts and, you know, covered the league and was highly respected. And so he was there, even though he was, you know, just sitting there in like a shirt with stains on it, probably.
Probably. I mean, ESPN is 4 years old at that point. So everybody's... I remember George Grand from that movie. There's someone else at the... Oh, Balzer is the other guy. It's Berman and Zimmerman and Howard Balzer.
Okay.
That's who are sitting there
The
83 draft and the Elway drama.
That's why you have draft with him there. Okay. Well, you mentioned him to me as someone who is...
Yeah. They're all sitting there speculating about whatever... Like, do the Raiders want Elway? It's all in that great 30 for 30. So, I don't know. McShay, he may be, because he's still relevant, right?
Sure.
We don't ever talk to him. I used to talk to him every week when I was working at ESPN. It was Kuiper was once in a while, but McShay was kind of new. He had a came from a different website, and this would be like late Saturday, Sunday nights, and he was on. Like, he was out there selling. Like, he would come on all the time. We talked every week. But this is still like... 20 years after that, and 10 years after Bill Tobin maybe coming on, and
right.
Like, who is Mel Kiper? Anyway, we have them to thank for all the, you know, speculation, you know, all the everything, including this big board from Jeremy, his appearance yesterday on the Facebook Live. He was talking about tweeting about the plastic and maybe the fumes. All of that plastic, half of it made it to the garbage can. The rest of it is just on the floor in here. I moved some of it into the garbage. There was one piece over here. There's four pieces on the floor over here. Cool that he left it. I mean, the board,
yeah,
at least. Not just the garbage. But, you know, here's all the... We got the list. This is... What did he tell us? This was their official list. It's 13 names, and it's cool. Devontae Walker did quite well. That was like the throw-in name yesterday in our conversation. Yeah. Odunze over Neighbors. Thomas Mitchell, Leggett, McConkey, Worthy, Coleman, Walker, Pearsall, Wilson, Baker. Good to see Baker repped on this, because I think we've sort of lost track of him on this show, talking about these receivers. We haven't talked about Javon Baker since like the very beginning of all of this, maybe a month ago, more than a month ago, was the last Javon Baker discussion. Though this is the big board. We got it right here in the room.
Baker, I feel like, maybe especially for me since the Diggs trade, because I know it's still possible, and I'm sure we will talk a lot between now and Thursday when it actually takes place, the first round of the draft, whether the Bills will do something else at 28 instead of receiver, and if they don't, then it's Javon Baker season. Like if he can make it to 60, like that would be, you know, that's you better get him if you don't get someone at 28. But the fact that they traded Diggs has me thinking like there's no way they're not moving heaven and earth to find a receiver on day one. So I'm not thinking about Javon Baker as much. If they had a third rounder, I might be a little more. But anyway,
it's all still up in the air. Will there be a trade up? You know, like right there, you mention it. Heaven and earth. What will be the general reaction? Not even, like, I've brought this up, like, I've slid this in a couple times, like Bills fans' reaction to whatever it is they do, but just anybody's. It'll make sense. if the Bills trade next year's number one pick, for example, to move up to what would that? What's the worst case scenario? Like the player, the pick, if they were to do that, does that get them to 15? Should they be able to do better than that if they were just like to throw? They're out there shopping their 2025 number one. They have pick 28. Does that get them to 15? Does that do better than that? What else? What does it do?
Boy, I probably, but if I'm dealing next year's one, I got loose on this the other day, and it ended up, I think, coming out as though, like, don't draft Brian Thomas Jr. And, like, I don't want to, like, peg that on that guy because, you know, I don't know him from Keon Coleman or any of these other guys. Like, ultimately, like, who's going to be the good player? I do not like the idea of giving up next year's one to only go to 15. Like, if I'm giving up next year's one, I'm going to give up more than that. Like, if I'm in the mood to spend that much, then don't go halfway. Like, go give me the, you know, one and two and one and four or one and four and one and two or whatever it takes to get up to the Bears at nine and go Odunze. Trading next year's one so I can move up, you know, however many spots it takes, Indianapolis at 15. I don't know. I know it's way less assets. I just don't. It feels like a half measure to me.
I think you can do that, say, 16. Seattle, with a reputation much more for moving down, whereas the Colts, you know, the Colts sound, this is me anyway, like just the Chris Ballard line from Evan Silva, they could use a receiver, like the best athletic prospect in the draft, maybe just guessing. Let's take the Seahawks at 16. What gets you from 28 to 16? Next year's 2 seconds?
Okay.
Or one of those and your second next week for their third or something like that.
Okay.
You know?
That's more palatable to me. I still would rank it. If I'm ranking outcomes, staying put, drafting a player who's great. Duh. Like that's we'd all prefer that. I would anyway. I don't need to trade down. Going all the way, like I said, up to the top 10, third place to me is this. It you know, I'm not gonna throw a fit, like, fine, but boy, I would really want to do it without giving up next year's one. So I know, 2-2s, fine. If there's a way to make that work, get into the middle, the Brian Thomas Jr. neighborhood, as I've been referring to it for weeks here, I would really balk at paying my next year's one for that.
I think most of these mock drafts, he's the only receiver in that neighborhood.
Yeah, that's why.
So
I
have to either need him or not bother.
Right.
You can go above that. I just think, and this I think can be shot down. But I don't want to trade up for anybody. So come at me. I don't know. Like, I think. This is, they've traded Diggs, of all players, Stephon Diggs. They've traded Stephon Diggs for a 25 pick, eaten the dead cap money. They've cut Poyer, probably Hyde, Trey White. This is the year where the Bills' act, if you will, has been, okay, this is the medicine mm-hmm. you have to take. Mm-hmm. We've been really good. We've taken our shots, Von Miller, you know, the different things, but this is the year to sort of take the medicine. I just don't think it lines up right to have that reality, because that's already established, mm-hmm. and then make this move.
Mortgage futures on top of that.
And plus you have the luxury of the wide receiver depth and talent in this class, so I'm never trading up. This is especially the year I'm not doing it.
The only thing that I would say that for me buffers, because I know before they traded Diggs, when we would talk about a big trade up, and I'd be like, they need to replenish. They need a lot of these picks, like maybe give away a few here or there to move up a couple spots. But trading bulk and quality probably isn't called for. Then the hole opens up for Diggs. And also along with the hole comes next year, you're not as strapped financially. Like you are taking medicine in that way, and that frees me up a little bit more, I think. It decreases the urgency because I think the Bills should be able to shop not for like big name, huge, like, you know, billboard type contracts for top tier free agents, but if they need to find depth and a starter here or there in free agency next year, I think they'll have more flexibility to do that because of the hole they created by moving on Diggs and eating all the money in 1 year. So that lessens how much I feel I need to hang on to all of those assets in the draft, because I think I can replenish another way next year because of the financial freedom I bought by making the Diggs move.
If they don't trade up, this is like back to sort of Jeremy yesterday on our Facebook live show. Just pick one. They've already, I don't remember exactly how he put it, but this is the price they have to pay for other moves they've made in recent years. You've put this off. Just take the best one at 28. Okay. Say they do that. Are they drafting another? Would you bet on them drafting another?
Yes.
Like by round 5? 2, 4, 5. They don't have a third. They could get one.
I don't know that I want to put a round. I would just expect them to pick another one on Saturday.
They have so many picks on Saturday, though, that it doesn't have to be that meaningful.
Well, sure. But I think they'll get another guy to throw in the mix. But, you know, how highly thought of, you know, is it? Because we'll think differently about the guy if he's a fourth round pick versus a seventh, of course, I think, mostly. So I think they'll take a flyer somewhere. I think they'll come out of this with more than one guy.
But you'd admit, I mean, somebody picked in the fourth round, you'd have a different set of expectations for. If they picked,
sure.
I know they have multiple picks, but if they picked, somebody on this board is going to Saturday. So Devontae Walker in the fourth, I would love that. But I'd love it less if they'd already picked Mitchell. You know, like that's somebody who should matter. More than Justin Shorter, like that's somebody that should really matter if they're picking them in the fourth round. If it's the seventh round, the odds are that the guy wouldn't even make the roster. So 4 is different from 7.
Mm-hmm.
But 7 is enough for, like, you're good because they'll have picked 2.
I'd rather they pick another one earlier, like you're suggesting. But I just think, I don't want to say for sure. I think if they pick, especially if they go big and go up, that to me decreases the likelihood, because they'll have fewer picks to choose guys going into Friday and Saturday. If they go big for like a Dunze, say, then I think you're looking at the back end of the draft for a second guy if it comes. If they just stay put, then yeah, I think I might like the idea, because to me, the sure thing factor with the top 10 pick decreases the number of darts I need to keep throwing. Like, I think I've got my guy, and I don't know, I probably want another one at some point. But if I wait till 28, and it's more of a, well, we don't know, we'll wait and see. I know they won't talk about him that way, but, you know, unfinished, he's got stuff to learn, ramp up period, all this stuff, then yeah, I think the earlier the better on Saturday. Get me another guy, because I need someone, or maybe together these two guys can, like, just, you know, fill the void.
I'd like this more if they traded down, because a lot of the draft conversation is about expectations and focus and, you know, sort of spotlighting your number one pick. And, you know, you get what you get from guys picked on Saturday. Like, A.D. Mitchell gets picked on Thursday night. Oh, here's the new hero. Here's the new Diggs. And then they pick Walker on Saturday. Like, oh, great, thanks. You know, we'll have a lineup of people on the show over the course of the offseason telling us Walker's even better. And the Bills, that gets complicated for a team, because Mitchell's the one where they need him to sort of, you know, hit. And, well, we got somebody better from the same draft. Well, why did you pick him in the first round? And all these other, this other slew of questions. If I were Bean, I'd want to avoid that. Like, I'd pick one at the end, maybe, but I'd want to avoid all this speculation that actually the guy you got that's actually better was 3 rounds later or something like that. But all hypothetical. Sal Capaccio joins us next. Travis Yost today as well to recap the Sabre season, talk the coaching vacancy, and the playoffs. Why not, right? We should talk about that. Even though the Sabres are not in them, we should talk about that. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. Sal next here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal!
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Seeing odds at Bet Online. If you're really, you want to gamble, you want to take a risk. Caleb Williams to be the first overall pick, 1 to 200. $1,000 is $20 if you win. If you're right, don't you need $20? I mean, if you're so sure, even if it's $100 to win $2, if you're so sure, is that even right? 1 to 200? I don't know. 1 to 200. I'm the teacher in Willy Wonka when Charlie Bucket says he's opened two candy bars. Like, I can't do that math. I don't know that one. One no. to 200. I know 200 to 1.
That's not a bet I'd ever make. It's sure to hit,
no.
So I won't touch it.
Anything close to a guarantee, Bulldog has no interest. Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline, the draft.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Less than a week away. I got just the text you want to see from Sal today, how he's going to have his interview with Mike North early next week, the schedule guy. And Sal's like, do you have any questions you want me to ask him? I'm like, do I? Sal, I do actually have one, if you want it. I do actually have one that I thought of about the schedule.
I can take it now and pass it along Monday night, hopefully.
I'd like to know what all matters when it comes to Week 18. So we spend, I mean, last year with the Bills, it was everything you want. Like, they were, it was close. You had the Miami Dolphins sitting there, possibly the division on the line. That's what came to fruition in Week 18. The Bills had also already played 6 night games. 7 is the all-time record, I believe, when they got that game in Miami. I just would love to know, like, what's irrelevant when it comes to that game, you know? Because we're always guessing at, you know, is this game important enough? Like, what really matters? Or what were they? Apparently, they were not deterred by the Bills having already played 6 night games, which was one thing I thought of last year. Like, would they do that?
Mm-hmm.
But that did actually happen. So maybe, because I'm not sure that's something that usually comes out of these conversations. We're thinking about the opener and other things, but maybe Week 18 would be interesting to
No, I love it.
Examine.
I think that's a great question to ask him about Week 18 and how they determine, you know, what matters for the primetime game. That's what I think you're saying, not just the overall schedule.
Yep.
Who matches up, because we know it's divisional games. You know, I mean, hey, someone asked me the other day to ask him about, like, the Saturday games in, you know, once the college season starts, and, you know, something along those lines, and, you know, what matters there in determining those games. So, yeah, I mean, I think all of that is very fair and on the table for him.
I kind of like it when, like, the idea of the draft. Like, I could wait another month. I could talk about the draft leading up to it for another month, but that, of course, would basically render schedule talk
right
irrelevant, useless, and I don't want that. I can't wait to get in. Once the draft is over, then we can really start to hammer away at what the schedule will look like. Let's move on, and let me ask you about Micah Hyde, your conversation with him today, Sal, on the Extra Point Show, live on WGR. What did you get from Hyde?
I thought it was really, really good from Micah. I was expecting him to be much more kind of vague. Of course, he didn't commit to anything because there's nothing to commit to right now. But he was very open about, you know, the fact that he is still weighing what he wants to do, and he hasn't completely decided that. He said he's keeping his body in shape, and he has told Brandon Bean that. Brandon Bean and him had a conversation. Bean told us that yesterday when we were down at One Bills Drive. He said he talked with Micah Hyde, and Micah said he FaceTimed with Brandon. Josh jumped on the FaceTime. They're having a good time. And he made it clear to Brandon Bean he's going to stay in shape. He's going to stay ready to play. He just doesn't know if he's going to play. And that's something that, you know, he's working through with his medicals, his wife, his family, all those things. He said, you know, it's a big decision. If you want to, it's kind of moved out of Buffalo, I guess, you know, from the way I understand it. And he'd have to come back to Buffalo, live here. And not that he's opposed to it. He wants to, you know, he would only play in Buffalo is what he said. I mean, I don't know if that, if another team wanted, who knows if that's the case. But he made it clear that nothing's been determined yet about his future and that he's been in communication with Brandon Bean. But, you know, also has to work for the money, guys, right? I don't know if, you know, Micah Hyde is going to come here and take a minimum deal. I wouldn't see something like that happening. I think it would have to work both the roster and the money. And Micah talked about the roster, too, and the numbers, and they already have guys. So, yeah, I mean, he's willing. He's able. If he's able, here's the thing. This could be one of those deals where you get to training camp or early in the season, you have an injury, and you're like, who can we call that knows the system? Oh, there's Micah Hyde.
Yeah, like I wonder, Sal, recognizing it's guesswork because we're basing this entirely off of public comments, which of course are polite and open and receptive. Like, would the Bills want him back, do you think? Like, is there any question about that?
I think Bills would be open to him coming back if the financial price was right for them.
Okay.
I don't think they would not want him back as a football player, if that makes sense. I don't think the Bills are interested in paying him more than what they would probably pay a lower-level reserve to come in and fight for a job. I think that's the tricky part with a guy like Micah Hyde. You're not going to insult him by doing that either. You know what I mean? Like, you have to kind of work through those types of situations. And I think that's when he says about the roster and the numbers, and I think he's probably alluding to that as well. So I think, yes, they would want Micah Hyde back if Micah Hyde wanted to play, he was healthy, and that they didn't have to pay him that much money.
With Sal Capaccio, so the draft, of course, the primary focus right now for the next week, if it hasn't been for weeks already, and so much time on wide receiver in here, Sal, just like trade up, trade down, all the different guys, their attributes, strengths and weaknesses. For you, positions of need on the Bills after receiver. Receiver is too obvious to deny, like with especially with Diggs traded. But, you know, again, regardless of draft capital or whatever, where do you think these guys, when they sit down and try to figure out this draft, where do they want to put their chips, so to speak, after receiver?
I think defensive line. They still have question marks about pass rusher, and it really kind of starts with Von Miller. If they think that Von Miller can get back to anything even close to what they were hoping for last year, then, you know, then you're more all set. But there's got to be questions about that, right? And then even if he does, what are you talking about as far as how much of a player he is, how often he's going to be on the field? You're going to have more from those other guys as far as a pass rush. So I think edge rusher, it's a group that I think they feel confident can get the job done to get after the quarterback when they need to every once in a while. But they're not going to have anybody that's that, we got a game plan for this guy. He's coming off the edge. We got to make sure that, you know, the Bills, I mean, like another team has a game plan for them. They don't have that type of guy unless Von Miller becomes that guy. Greg Rousseau's a nice player. AJ Epenesa needs to take a step. But I think they need more there. I also think they need more on the interior defensive line, only because of the numbers guys and the way they rotate. I like their players. It was a really nice, you know, it was great getting back to Aquan there. Really nice addition, Austin Johnson, Sean Williams. Those are nice players. But they need more there as far as the rotation and what they want to do, you know, from down to down.
Yeah, edge, I think, is pretty interesting. And I think, I wonder, Sal, about when they get the you know, we'll see what happens with the draft and you know, what they're able to land, if anything, at that position. You know, maybe it's more of a developmental guy that's chosen on Saturday, or maybe, who knows, maybe even in round two, depending. But I wonder about when the money comes from the Trey White release. if they're able to go do, like, and I'm not sure what that marketplace looks like right now. I know Leonard Floyd isn't sitting out there like he was last year for them to go grab late in the going, but shopping, you know, in that market might be something that they're thinking about doing.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they have, I think, more question marks on defense than they do on offense, because on offense, it's really about the one big question mark, which is wide receiver, right? I mean, what do you have there? But you look around the roster, the offensive line seems set. I mean, they need depth at running back. They don't really need much at tight end. You go to the other side of the ball, though. Yep, Leonard Floyd, you lost. What do you do at edge rusher? What do you do D-line? And then corner, safety. Now, I think they really, really like their starting guys at the corner and safety spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you could make an argument to how much do they really love Taylor Rapp. They didn't pay him enough money, so I could listen to that for sure. I think they like Mike Edwards a lot. But you look at corner, you got Douglas and you got Benford, and you got Taron Johnson. I think they are very, very happy with that starting three. The same question I just had about Von Miller, but in a much different way, is Kyer Elam. What they feel about their corner spot probably really, really depends on what they feel about Kyer Elam, guys. And then at safety, they need depth. I mean, they like Cam Lewis, obviously. He's a really nice player. He's a backup nickel corner. He's a backup safety. Damar Hamlin isn't someone they want on the field playing a lot. He's a nice special teams player. But they have to address the numbers at those positions for sure, and specifically the second team at those positions.
I wouldn't mind getting back to Elam, but on the line, and in particular Greg Rousseau, what's your analysis of the decision the Bills have on the fifth-year option for Rousseau?
They're going to do it. Brandon Bean will take his time to announce it, but when I spoke to him at the owners' meetings, and we did, and I asked him about it, he said he sees no reason not to exercise the fifth-year option at this point, so they're going to do it, and I think they should. Greg Rousseau is a good player. He's still an ascending player, and he is a guy that, yes, you'd be guaranteeing him, I think it's 13-plus million a year, which you might want to massage that, but here's, it'd be easier to massage it by giving it to him and then working on a new deal than it would be to just let him walk into the last year of his contract, and then all of a sudden, what if he blows up and you're sitting there and he's an unrestricted free agent? You would have to use a franchise tag in that case.
I guess I get that. What you could end up being victim to is if he just has sort of that random sack year.
Yeah.
And you pay for that, right? Like, he's probably the same player, but what data has taught us about sacks is how much of that relies on quarterbacks and some randomness. I mean, a guy like Von Miller in his career, certain guys are undeniable for that, but that's not Rousseau. So if you get a year where Rousseau, he plays more, just sort of works out, that could end up, well, you know, if you pick up the option, then that's not, you know, you can't be a victim of that because you've already made the decision, but that can just be a thing, I mean.
But that certainly could impact the negotiating a longer-term contract off of, the comfort of having that fifth-year option. Yeah, I don't think they're in a position at all. Like, he's, you know, not a great player, but he's certainly a starting caliber player and has made his share of plays. And I'd have been stunned if they weren't going to pick up that option on him at least. And we'll see if they end up getting around to, you know, a longer term extension with him, because they're, you know, like we've just said, there's not a lot of depth there right now at that spot.
Right.
It is why, you know, every time it comes up, like Chop Robinson at 28, I want to push back because I know they need receiver, but I recognize the dearth of players they've got at defensive end. I mean, and Miller is, of course, the big variable there.
No, that's right. And I think the floor, the bottom guys at defensive end, if you look at the depth chart, I think they're comfortable with. You know, Kingsley Jonathan's played pretty well when he's played, right? He's a nice step piece to bring in. Cameron Klein, I know that they like him a lot as a guy that they can rely on. Hey, if you need to put him on the field for a game or two and eat up some snaps, he'd be okay. They signed Casey Tuhill. It's just that top end, guys. I mean,
yep. You're
going into these playoffs, and look, they did not get to Patrick Mahomes last year. They didn't get to Joe Burrow the year before. That's the issue. It's the issue of, can they get the top end production? And even if a guy falls down and they're looking at guys, good edge rushers in the draft, I think that's the question they have to ask. Like, is this a guy that can come in here and be a double-digit sack guy? Maybe not right away, but at least in his second year. And I still think that's even an interesting question that Or are you just drafting a guy that kind of fits in the rotation like these other guys, like an A.J. Epenesa, like a Greg Rousseau? Because I think that's a tough thing to add if you're really not getting the maximum production to really elevate the group.
I'll say on Elam, Sal, I don't know if you disagree with this, but, you know, you have these in fantasy, too, like buy, sell, hold. There's no move other than to hold on Elam. Like, for what my expectation of the market would be, no, nobody's trading for him like he's your first-round pick from 2022 or whatever it is. Like, just that is not his value anymore. Mm-hmm. So you could give him away. That might look bad on you, but maybe it's so far gone you kind of wanted to be done with it and you get a day-three pick or something for him. I think that might be possible, maybe even likely. That just doesn't look good on you, and you've got plenty of day-three picks already. So I think... I don't know if this is the likeliest scenario, but I don't really want to give him away because that's not of much value to me. I do not expect like a good value for Elam. I think I just sort of hang in there. And you've talked about the change they made in the staff with the corner coach or the secondary coaches, where maybe they have Elam in mind for that. I wouldn't want to trade him for what I think I could get.
First of all, Mike, I agree with you. And second of all,
okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'll tell you, they won't do that. They're not just going to give Kyrie Elam away for all those reasons you just said. They're still invested in him. They want to see this work out. And I would say do not underestimate what the organization feels about maybe what the coaching staff change can do for him. That is in no way an indictment of John Butler, who did a really good job, obviously, with the guys he had. But for some reason, it just seemed like Kyrie Elam and John Butler either didn't see eye to eye. He wasn't developed under John Butler the way the other guys have. So a new corners coach coming in, Jameel Adai is his name. He's coming in from college. Maybe some fresh eyes to take a look at Kyrie Elam and what he can do. Kyrie Elam's going to work his butt off. There's no doubt about that. There's already social media posts of him showing. You know, a lot of guys do that. But you know, he's been trying to do his part in this. So I would tell you, they are going to hold on him. I think the question is, how long do they hold? Probably a whole nother year. But if it gets to a point in the summer and they've done these workouts and they get to training camp and it's just not working out, at that point you get to August, you've got to make decisions on the roster. Do you then say, hey, we got to really make a decision here on what we need to do because we just don't see him really taking a roster spot on game day? And then you're in a situation again like last year where you're making him inactive. Yeah. I don't think they want to do that.
Yeah,
they'll hold on him as long as possible.
100%. I think the most likely scenario is he's here and he's depth, and like hopefully it straightens out enough that they can give him a uniform on game days. If in the summer it looks like that's not happening, to me he's a cut candidate at that point. Because I don't think there would be any trade value left at that point if he's clearly not making your team. Teams in the league would know that. And, you know, maybe what they do next week plays a part in that. Like how highly do they draft corner depth? I mean, I would expect they come out of the draft with a player at that position. But if it's a first or a second round pick, which I don't predict, but who knows, then that could be like more footsteps closing in on the end of Elam's time here. But I think he gets the summer to see if he can demonstrate that he can be trusted.
I agree with that. You know, the other day I, I put a video out and I said, hey, stop mocking a corner to the Bills. Like they love, they really like that. Right. And part of it is because if you draft a guy at 28, he's not starting. Like, what are you doing? Like, he's not getting on the field unless there's an injury to Benford or Douglas. It just seems like a wasted draft pick. But the other part of it is, I just don't think they want to draft someone over Kyrie Elam right now. Like, I don't think they feel they need to do that. Now, there are questions about him, and maybe they also understand that and think, hey, we could get to August, and it's not working out. But at this point, we're not drafting over him. We're not pushing him further down the depth chart. We believe we can still work with him and see where it goes. That's why, you know, maybe a safety could still be in the cards early in the draft. But, boy, you want to go corner at 28? I just think that guy's sitting on the bench, guys, and he might be sitting on the bench not only behind the top two, but maybe behind Kyrie Elam.
My mind just went drifting to the schedule again, I have to admit. I was just thinking about the schedule. Sal, do you have a game? I don't know if you're thinking like this yet. You know, you've got a family. Hopefully, for your sake, I want to say you're not. But maybe you're such a sicko about the schedule that you would be and the Bills. You have a game that like you're sort of the most often thinking about. I think about that game in Houston. And I don't know, like it's not a bettable thing, acknowledging that I did take Bulldogs action last year when he bet that the Bills Jets would be week one in prime time, and he was right about that. He deserved the money. Bills Houston, there have been plenty of primetime games between Buffalo and Houston. I don't know if it's like Sunday night, but it's better than 1 o'clock Sunday with the Diggs piece now too. I liked it already for maybe Monday night week one, a game like that. I kind of want to make, you know, a prediction that the Bills-Texans game is a night game.
I think that fits. I even think week one fits. The pushback I've gotten when I've suggested that to people is they wouldn't have the Bills open up on the road 3 years in a row, especially on primetime. The Cincinnati Bengals opened up 7 straight years on the road. So I don't think nobody cares about that.
I've never even thought about that once.
Yeah, right, like from 2009 through 2016, I believe they opened up every single year on the road. So I don't think it really matters there. But to answer your question, yes, I am looking forward to that. Also, my buddy John Harris down there and Mark Vandermeer, the play-by-play guy, they promised me a really good barbecue that night in Houston the night before. So I'm looking for that trip for sure. But the other one, guys, you talk about, you know, having a family. Like, we've talked about it. What I really hope happens, I want that Seattle trip to be on and, like, close the same, like, backing up to the bye week, essentially. Because
so you can stay there.
To go out to Seattle and spend a few extra days.
Yes. I just did that last summer, and I'll never forget it. Because I did not book. So we went out there for a cruise in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go early so we could do Seattle. So we were there. We were in Seattle for 3 days before the cruise. And then we had one day on the other end, just based on when the flights worked out and everything.
Yep.
And so I just, like, this is how I am. I put off booking a room for that last day. Like, you know, whatever, maybe we'll just jump on a plane or something. Some other event will
leave our options open.
The options open. So we go to Seattle on a Tuesday in July. This is in 2023, right? This was last summer.
Yeah.
And the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is happening as we're landing. And in Seattle, you sort of fly over, well, we did this day, over the stadiums and back around. And, like, the ball game is happening. So, very expensive to stay there on the front end. But, you know, that's just a random thing, right? It's not going to be $700 a night on the other end. So, I'm just, you know, we'll get on the ship. We'll enjoy the cruise. And then I'll take care of it. So, now it's, like, the following Tuesday. And we need a room for the Friday night. Because our flight is 5 a.m. Saturday, leaving Seattle. And I'm finally get around to it on the ship. Looking at hotels, and everything is $700 a night. Like, what is it about Seattle? Like, why is it so expensive? Taylor Swift. On the other end. So I got the All-Star game on the front. And it wasn't even the night of her show. Her show was Saturday. But, you know, here comes Vancouver. Right, here comes everybody from the Pacific Northwest. Piles into Seattle.
Japan.
And they open the stadium just to sell merchandise. So the Friday, like, it was $700 to stay in a nothing.
Not a $700 hotel.
No.
Yeah, right.
So I got beat. I got beat on that. Sal, none of this will matter to you. Probably. Maybe there'll be other concerts and ball games you'll have to consider, but hope it works out for you. Thank you, Sal.
Have a great weekend, guys.
You too.
All right, that's our Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
We've got Travis Yost coming up. There was a report from The Athletic today that the Pegulas are selling a portion of the Bills, and the Bills have responded with a statement, quote, "The Pegula family has retained Allen & Company." That's not like the team, right? Allen & Company. They're not calling the team Allen & Company at this point. "The Pegula family has retained Allen & Company to explore the potential sale of a non-controlling minority interest in the Bills. These discussions only involve the Bills and no other team. No investment would be possible without Terry Pegula and the Pegula family maintaining a controlling interest in the team. Their continued commitment to Western New York, the new Highmark Stadium, our fans, and the other teams in their portfolio remains unchanged. Neither the team nor the Pegula family are able to comment further at this point." End quote. I'm not sure that's what able means. They would be able to comment. They're choosing not to.
Right.
Let's just work on that. Travis Yost coming up on the Sabres, the NHL playoffs, and he's a Bills fan, the Bills too. Always a great chat with Travis. Stay tuned. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.